We're going to start, since last week we did a healing-focused service, we were in Mark 14 the week before, and I don't expect you to remember all that. So we're going to go back and pick up just a little bit in Mark chapter 14. I'm going to start with verse 32. This is Jesus in Gethsemane, so this is very fit with the theme for the Palm Sunday. So they came to a place named Gethsemane. And I'll say this later probably, but Gethsemane means oil press or olive press. And so it really fits for what's going to happen here. So they came to a place named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here until I have prayed." And then he took Peter and James and John and began to be very distressed and troubled. And he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch." And he went a little farther. He went a little beyond them. And I want to tell you, that's what Jesus is like. When you get as far as you can get, he'll go farther than you did. He'll go beyond what you did. When the leper came to get prayed for and healed, it was against the law. It was illegal. For the Jewish religious law, at least, to touch a leper, but he put his hands on him. None of the others did. But he went a little further, and the leper's healed like that. Are you with me? That's what he's like. In this case, he left them to be on watch. So he wasn't there alone. He said, "I'm so distressed." This is Jesus talking, where he would always talk other people out of being distressed. He's saying, "I'm so distressed. You guys keep watch. Make sure the soldiers aren't coming yet," and whatever. But he went a little further. He went up beyond them and fell to the ground and began to pray that if it were possible, the hour might pass him by. And he was saying, "Abba, Father." Now he's calling out to the Lord in a real personal way. This is like saying daddy, papa, you know, that kind of thing. And so he was saying, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me, yet not what I want, but what you want." So not my will, but yours. And he came and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep?" Well, he knew he was asleep. And notice he says it to Peter, not the other guys. You see that? "Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not come into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." People use that verse all the time, but not in context. This is in a very high stress, difficult thing. He's not just saying, "I messed up because, you know, spirit's willing, the flesh is weak." No, he's saying, "Guys, recognize that this is the case, but it doesn't need to be the case." Don't let it be the case. "Again, he went away and prayed, saying the same words. And again, he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy. And they did not know what to answer him." I'll bet not. "And he came to them a third time and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting?'" Isn't that interesting? Because in just a few hours, Peter's going to deny him three times. I wonder if he'd been awakened any of those times, if maybe the denials wouldn't have been there. Maybe an exchange was going to happen. Maybe something was going to take place. Since he came to wake him up three different times, and he spoke to Peter in particular, I wonder if he wasn't going to deposit something in Peter that would have helped him in that time of temptation he was just talking about. Because Peter's going to get tempted to deny Jesus all three times, and he's going to strike out. It says, "Are you still sleeping? Resting? It's enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand." So he leads them all in there. He just takes Peter, James, and John with him. And then I love this. He goes a little farther, and the little farther he goes is into agonizing prayer. I wonder if they might not have reached that same thing had they stayed awake. But he cries out, "Abba, Father." There's a couple other places in the scriptures where Abba, Father, is used in Romans 8, 15. It says, "For you've not received the spirit of slavery, leading again to fear, but you've received the spirit of adoption as sons, by which we cry out, Abba, Father." It's the reality of being a son. It's the connection. It's this relationship that is so tender that you don't have with any other person. And that's how he's calling out to the Father, out of that point of desperation. And then Galatians chapter 4, because you are sons, again, this is about family. Because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So he's relating to the Father, not from some professional or even powerful type situation. It's like, Dad, I need help. Papa, I need help. Can you do anything? You can do something. Here's what I want you to do, but I want you to do what you want to do more than I want you to do what I want you to do. Wow. That doesn't happen to us very much, does it? No, I want you to do what I want you to do. That's called humanity. And then he says this very cool thing. He said, it's enough. The idea is over. The bill's been paid. That's it. I've filled it. It's enough. And what I put in your outline there, I think, is highly significant. What has been settled in prayer, that's what happened. He said, I really want you to do this for me, but it's more important to me that what's important to you gets done than what's important to me gets done. He settled this thing in the place of prayer. And what gets settled in prayer gets carried out in life. And I want to tell you, a lot of us have problems that if we wrestled in prayer, if we settled it in prayer, if we came to that point where he said, you know I don't want to do this, but I know you want me to do this. And I'm choosing you. You got to help me. But I'm choosing what you want above what I want. And then he goes out and lives it. Well, don't you ever have times when you can't get out of a conflict? You can't seem to solve an issue? You can't seem to live this thing out, right? I would invite you to struggle in prayer. When I say struggle, I mean deal with your own stuff in prayer. Discipleship starts when we deal with our own stuff before him in prayer. When we're willing to be that real with him in prayer. And when you get it settled there, you've already won once. Now what you have to do is live in the yes that you chose. That can be a difficulty, but you've already made the choice. Jesus made the choice. I don't want to do this cross thing and them ripping me open and tearing me up and mocking me and spitting on me and having to go into hell and take the keys of death. I mean, could we pass on that one? But if we can't, I'm in. I'm in. I'm telling you, this is one of the ways he goes a little farther with us, showing he could have a wrestle with his choice, a wrestle with his will, if I can say it this, a wrestle with his destiny, and say, I got stuff I want, but I want you to empower me to want your stuff more than I want my stuff. It doesn't mean you won't get your stuff. That's not what it means. It means I'm satisfied because you're getting yours. Well, you know what he does? He's a good father. He probably gives you more than you were looking for, better than you were looking for. But it doesn't feel like that in the moment. So I just think this is a really important thing to catch. What gets settled in prayer can get carried out in the rest of your reality. And if you're not able to carry it out in your reality, maybe needs to go back here and put your will and his will in the wrestling match and see if you can't let him win. Demanding to win on your part, my part, usually ends up in plan B at the best, not what he wants. And you can see why Jesus would say, is there a way of getting out of this? I mean, can I please you and not have to go through this cross thing? Wow, yeah, I can understand why he would say that. He's perfectly God and understood, and he's perfectly man and realized, oh my God, this is going to be hell. That's exactly what it was going to be. Exactly. But dealing with the hell on earth is what brings heaven on earth. This is good, really good. Wrestle it, settle it. When you get it done there, the opportunity then will present itself for you to act on it. But you've already won once. You might have the opportunity to keep winning and win the whole thing. Because it's not just that we understand the will of God. That's tremendous. I mean, some people are just aching, if I just knew the will of God. Well, get in there and ask him about it. Because when the will of God gets executed, that's where real satisfaction comes. Not just knowing what it is, but actually having it expressed in your life. That's, and of course, he did that perfectly. So if you don't get anything else, get that one. That's a really important part. Verse 43. He comes back and he tells them, guys, let's get up, let's go. The betrayer's coming, everything's going to happen. This is done. It's done. I paid the bill. Well, he has. He's going to go walk it out, but he's paid the bill. You sweat drops of blood in Gethsemane. So the blood he shed on the cross was secondary to the blood that he shed in the garden. So immediately while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, came up and accompanied by a crowd with swords and clubs who were from the chief priests and scribes and the elders, so the leaders. Now he was betraying him. Now he who was betraying him had given him a signal saying, whomever I kiss, he's the one, seize him and lead him away under guard. Now after coming, Judas immediately went up saying hi to the rabbi, greeting him, kissed him on cheek, very culturally acceptable. They laid hands on him and seized him. But one of those who stood by drew his sword and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. Way to go, Pete. That was Peter who did that. And Jesus said to them, have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as you would against a robber? Every day I was with you in the temple teaching, and you didn't seize me. But this has taken place to fulfill the scriptures. And they all left him and fled. So the 12 took off. And a young man was following, wearing nothing but a linen sheet over his naked body, and they seized him. But he pulled free of the linen sheet and escaped naked. That was Mark, who's writing the book of Mark. He was the young man who was dressed in toga only and then only, no toga. So, and it's really interesting. When you read Mark's gospel, he's the one that's nothing but the facts, nothing but the facts. He doesn't tell all the stories. He doesn't give all the genealogies, nothing but the facts. And the facts are here. They got me, but I got loose. Now, he was noticeable, but he got loose. And then it doesn't say anything how he got there or how his mother chewed him out for going out without any clothes on. It doesn't say anything. He just said he got away. So he got away. And we know he didn't get killed because he wrote the book. Verse 53, they led Jesus away to the high priest, and all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes gathered together. And Peter had followed them at a distance right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the officers and warming himself at the fire. And when the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain testimony against Jesus to put him to death, they were not finding any. They just couldn't get him to talk. For many were giving false testimonies against him, but their testimonies weren't consistent. Some stood up and began to give false testimony against him, saying, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple made with hands, and in 3 days I'll build another one made without hands. Not even in this respect was their testimony consistent. The high priest stood up and came forward and questioned Jesus, saying, do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you? But he kept silent and did not answer. Again, the high priest was questioning him, saying to him, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus said, I am, as you shall see, the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power, coming with the clouds of heaven. So when he answered, he gave him a doozy answer. Tearing his clothes, the high priest said, what further do we need to have of witnesses? You've heard the blasphemy. How does it seem to you? And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. Some began to spit at him and to blindfold him and beat him with their fists and say, prophesy, who hit you? And the officers received him with slaps in his face. So he gets betrayed. They drag him into the priests, and they're accusing him of things that are against Jewish law. But the ones that are going to have to try him are Romans. And the Romans don't care about Jewish law. And so they're trying to find something bad enough that they can say, you take care of him. Because the Romans weren't going to let the Jews kill anybody. That's their gig. It was their responsibility, and that's what they did. So when the high priest hears that, he says, yes, I am. I am means God. That's who God says he is. I am, right? And Jesus answers that way. So he's losing his mind. And they say, no, we're going to beat him up, we're going to take him to the Pilate. We're going to get this all taken care of, take him to the governor. So then we have this little synopsis in there of Peter. A slave girl, verse 67, sees Peter and claims that he had been with Jesus, and Peter denies it. Then she sees him a second time and accuses him of being with Jesus again, but again he denies it, says he doesn't even know who Jesus is. Then some of the others of the crowd that were gathered there said, hey, you were with him, you're one of his guys. And he swears and curses loudly and completely denies having anything to do with Jesus. And then the rooster crows three times. Because Jesus had said, today, before this day is over, you're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows. Well, the rooster crows, and Peter cries. Tough situation. So we got to get him out of here. So we need to jump into chapter 15. They're taking Jesus before Pontius Pilate, who was the ruler here. Early in the morning, the chief priests and the elders and the scribes and the entire council immediately held a consultation, and they bound Jesus and led him away and turned him over to Pilate. Pilate questioned him, so, you're the king of the Jews? And he said, it is as you say. And the chief priests started accusing him of many things. But Pilate questioned him again, saying, do you offer anything in answer? See how many charges they're bringing against you? Jesus said nothing and further to answer. And Jesus made Pilate absolutely amazed. Like, if this is your chance, I'm the guy in charge here. I can get you off the hook. Talk to me. Now at the Passover feast, he, being Pilate, used to release for them any one prisoner that they requested. This is kind of an annual thing. And one named Barabbas had been imprisoned with rebels who had committed murder in the revolt, and the crowd went up and began asking Pilate, as he had been accustomed to do for them, and Pilate said, answered them, saying, do you want me to release the king of the Jews? For he was aware that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd and asked them to release Barabbas instead. And responding again, Pilate said, well, then what will I do with this one you call the king of the Jews? And they shouted back, crucify him. But Pilate said to him, why? What evil has he done? But they shouted all the more, crucify him. And intent on satisfying the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them, and having Jesus flogged, he handed him over to be crucified. So, this is a tough time, just a very, very difficult time. And Pilate doesn't really see anything worth killing him for, but that's what they want, and he wants to shut him up. He doesn't want to have a riot. He's trying to pacify the crowd. And so, crucifixion was about the only opportunity that they could have left. And so they say, here, you take him. They dressed him up in purple clothes like royalty. They put a crown of thorns on the head and his head. They beat him. They kicked him around. They pushed him around. Again, they would play, guess who's hitting you? If you're the prophet, tell me, you know, and all sorts of demeaning, accusational, criminalizing type of things. And they finally say, go now. So they strap a cross on him to carry, because they're going to go up to this hill called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. And this a North African guy, Simon from Cyrene, happened to be in the crowd, and they said, hey, you look like you're sturdy, and we beat him up so bad he can't carry it. So they got him to carry the cross. and take it up the hill. And there's a problem here. That they get there, and now what's going to happen? How's this going to take place? There's two other thieves there that are being crucified with Jesus. And if you go to the other Gospels, you know there's an exchange between Jesus and the thieves. In Mark's Gospel, they just said, "We thought you were the, if you're the king, get us out of here. Get me out of here. Get you out of here. If you're really if you got power, use it. Get down from here. You know, you were going to rebuild the temple? Let's go do that. Anything, obviously, to escape it." And then they began ridiculing him because they didn't think he had any capacity to do anything about it. And they allow him to sit and suffer, and people throwing out all sorts of bombs at him, saying, "Hey, you know, if you're the creator guy, create a new situation. If you were going to build a new temple, tear down the cross and, you know, get started. Do stuff that you said you were going to do." Obviously, mis-evaluating everything that he said. And they try to offer him sour wine to keep him alive because he's saying things, and they're thinking he's calling out to Elijah to have Elijah come and take care of him. And I thought, if he's this guy that's worthy of being crucified, how would he have any power with Elijah? I mean, it's stupid that anybody would think that, but then crucifixion is a pretty stupid thing. So he cries out, "You know, my God, why have you turned your back on me? How have you taken my goal and as your son and parted the waters, stepped back from me, and forsaken me," is the word that he uses. And tough thing. He cries out like that, which is probably Psalm 22, verse 1, where it says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning?" It's like you've turned your back on me, Lord. Well, he who knew no sin became sin that we might become the righteousness of God. There had to be a separation. There was a separation between God and man. Jesus came to fill that separation. He had to get separated from the Father in order to build the bridge between God and man. That's what was going on. And he did it. And he did it. He was in the perfect community, the perfect unity in heaven. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, all in this one sphere of loving relationship. And that got broken. Momentarily, but it got broken. And he had never, ever been felt any degree of separation, because you know what separates? Sin. And he'd never known sin, so there was never any separation in the relationship. But then he didn't just do a sin, he became sin itself. We deal with sins. He dealt with sin. All of it, for everybody, for all time. Wow. I mean, like, wow. And so he's crying out, "I don't know how to be like this, but I am." That's why he was saying, "Lord, if there's any way of letting this pass, could we let it pass? No, not and save humanity, no." And he knew the number one thing was saving humanity, so he did it. It says in three or four other places in the Bible, we'll look at them all, what the centurion who was right in front of the cross said. Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. This is verse 37. "The veil in the temple is torn from top to bottom. Then the centurion who was standing right in front of him saw how Jesus died and uttered, 'This man was the Son of God.'" Matthew 27 says it this way. "Now for the centurion and those who were with him, keeping guard over Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the other things that were happening, they became extremely frightened and said, 'This was truly the Son of God.'" Luke says it was about the sixth hour, and darkness came over the entire land until the ninth hour, because the sun stopped shining and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And Jesus, crying out with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I entrust my spirit." And having said this, he died. Now when the centurion saw what happened, he began praising God, saying, "This man was in fact innocent. Wow. You don't do that to an innocent man, but they did. Therefore, when Jesus received the sour wine, this is in John 19, he says, "It's finished." And he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. It's finished. Now, what was finished? What was finished is that he'd wrestled in Gethsemane in the garden, the wine press, the oil press, getting the life squeezed out of him, if you want to say it that way. And he said, "I'm choosing your will." He goes to the cross, and he's been beaten, whipped, you know, 30 lashes, 40 lashes, all that kind of stuff. And because that happened, by his stripes we are healed. Because he shed blood on the cross. It's the, Paul says in Colossians, we are saved by the peace that came by the blood of the cross. So enmity between God and man was replaced by the peace with God and man, and it happened because of the blood that was shed on the cross. And he says, it's finished. It's finished. That's why people in Protestant churches don't like to see a full cross. He ain't there anymore. That's bad English, but that's very good theology. The cross is empty and the tomb is empty, but the throne is occupied. That's how it got finished. That's how it got finished. And interestingly enough, he said, "Well, that's amazing." Yes, and then part of the amazement is in Ephesians 2, it says that we are seated there with him in heavenly places now. Oh, you're standing here now. Yeah, but I'm there now too. How's that happen? Well, he's pretty good at this. Him being God is not a task for him. And I'm in him and he's in me. And it says that once we give our life to him and he accepts us and we accept him in that fullness, and we, that the blood cleanses us from all sin, then our life is then hidden with Christ in God. Wow. Well, how do you live that? As best you can. You grow up into those things. But the reality is, he's not in the tomb and he's not on the cross. Because I was worried about that when I first became a Christian, which was a couple of years ago. But a day is 1,000 years, you know. So it was some time ago. It's like I didn't get it. So every time I sinned, I would think, "Oh no." And like I could hear the Lord saying, "Here goes Brown again. Okay, Jesus, back to the cross." That's what I thought. Because how does that get paid for? Because, you know, I just did it. I said it, or I refused to say it. I went someplace, or I refused to go someplace. Somehow didn't do the thing that was right, and I made a mistake. Sinned. Kind of thing that happens more frequently than any of us want to, right? But he made one sacrifice for sin forever and then sat down at the right hand of the Father. He like took care of it forever, because it wasn't just this little sin and that little sin. It was all the sin of all humanity for all time. Wow. I mean, think about that. Wow. And so what happened to him is impossible for us to totally understand. The beatings, the whippings, the spitting, the thorns in the, you know, sword in the side, nails in the hands, wasn't the greatest kind of suffering for him. It was the fact that never having known any kind of separation between him, the Holy Spirit, and the Father, and in having to be abandoned, forsaken, like a man without a country, so to speak, and then guilty of everything anybody would ever do. A guiltless, innocent, sinless person becoming the whipping boy for the whole universe. Wow. Do you really believe that? Yeah, I really do. Because that's really the truth. And it's a little hard to get your brains around sometimes, but it's not a brain thing. Anyway, it's a heart thing. Recognizing he did all that. This is what he did. This is what he was saying. Lord, if the salvation of human beings can't happen without all this happening, then I'll do it. But man, the torture, because never having been left alone, never experienced being alone ever. Never had any, not one moment where he ever felt overlooked or unloved. I mean, think about that. Wow. No rejection. Because he had the ultimate acceptance and approval. Now we get it. We get the same acceptance and approval. And guess what? It's based on his behavior, not yours. Fact is, it's funny. Used to say that, why do people have church fights? I actually said this in a business meeting one time, but I could. I said, you know, here's the church, the only club in the world that you have to admit that you're wrong to get in. Huh? You got to admit you're a sinner to get in, right? Then somebody sins. We got to get rid of that guy. I mean, think about it. Isn't that kind of strange? Yeah. Now, we want to help that guy, and we don't want him doing that, but do you understand what I'm saying? And so the idea is the sinless Son of God giving us the liberty, the freedom to walk in a way different than we were before. And you still will sin. Ask my wife. She'll tell you. Or I can ask yours. Anyway, just balancing the thing out. What we have to understand is that sin, the principle of sin itself, was taken care of. Sins are taken care of by 1 John 1:9. It says, if we sin, if we confess it to him, he's faithful and just to forgive us and cleanse us from all transgressions. And so we get the opportunity to be forgiven and cleansed. Which means, if you really mean it when you tell the Lord, man, I really jacked this up. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Forgive me. He forgives you. And then he cleanses you. Which is to say, now he looks at you like you didn't ever do it. Amen. You're justified. Which means it's like just as if you died and it never happened. Isn't that cool? Yeah. That's how thorough this is. That's what's behind all this. So when he said it's finished, he just wasn't talking about his part. He's talking about our part too. Our need to try to find a way to get God to accept us or approve us has been taken care of. Because he totally, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. And he places his Spirit in us and us in him. Consequently, we get the acceptance and approval that he gets. But we don't deserve it. And I said, well, he paid the price and he didn't deserve it. It's a really good exchange. And so that's what Palm Sunday, that's what Easter is all about. We're saving the resurrection for next week. It's Easter, you know. Give me a break. Right? But do you understand all this is happening behind the scenes? And so when you say, talk about salvation, it's you being saved from all of that he incurred and saved unto everything we don't deserve, but we get because that's what grace and mercy does. So all this being finished, it's like filled out. The check is filled out in red, but it's a grace and mercy check. And now we get his grace and we get his mercy. And what do you have to do? Ask. You have to say yes. And then ask for the power to keep saying yes. But that's really the issue. So think about this just a little bit. Now you can see how perfectly he wrestled with this. He struggled with this in prayer. And he comes out on the other end. 100% name above all names. Worthy of all kind, every praise that could ever be. Because he followed through. He didn't just say, well, you know what? I prayed and And I won the victory, so let's go have lunch. He didn't do that. He went right from there to the cross and walked it out. what he had won in prayer. I think there's a lot of victory that could come to us if those things were exclusively ours, if we laid hold of those things knowing that, no, that's why he died, to make this possible for me. And if your focus was like mine at the first, because I didn't know better, I was always trying to just be the obey guy and obey everything. Well, you know what? I wasn't perfect. So then I was the frustrated obey guy, really wanting to do everything right. I was not perfect. Fact is, I was flawed. Fact is, still am. This human thing's a whole different gig. You know, you try to cast the humanity out of yourself, it won't go. But redeemed humanity is the gift of God. And redemption means we don't have to live the way we used to. And we get to walk into things that are way, way, way significant. The last thing I put in your notes, I just wanted to refer to, is that at the crucifixion, a whole bunch of ladies were there. The people who had followed him, and they came to Jerusalem maybe for the Passover and all of that, but also they were there. And there were intercessors. There were people who were there supporting and serving the Lord. And a whole bunch of them were female. I just think, guys, we just can't let the ladies always outpray us. I'm blessing people. I'm not being angry or mean or anything. But I think he says this right at the end of the chapter. It just says, oh yeah, and there was a whole bunch of ladies who had been following him. They were still there. So they were there to see it all, see it through all the way. And then next week, we're going to find out the first ones to get up in the morning and go to the tomb are the ladies. Again, now, if they'd been really faithful ladies, they would have known he wasn't going to be there. Right? Love me now. Come on. But I want you to see the power of prayer. He had people that the Lord had given to him, entrusted unto him, to support him by praying. And they weren't just there for the celebrations like the wedding where he turns the water to wine. That's a pretty cool deal. But at the cross too. And so, you know, sometimes that's what life is like. You have to face some of these things that you don't want to. But you know what? Jesus knew what was going to happen. He knew the end from the beginning. And he proved it out. And so that's, why don't you stand up with me? We'll pray that. I'm going to ask you to do something. So yeah, if you would look at the floor or close your eyes, stare at your feet, whatever you want to do. But I'm going to ask for a hand count here, and so I don't want to embarrass anybody. So it's just between you and me and the Lord. But I've said this now about 6 times. If you get it settled in prayer, then you can get it worked out in life. How many of us are struggling or facing something that we haven't been able to make work? Yeah, all over the room. Yes, yes. Lord, would you come now and touch us and grant us the grace to find the answer in prayer with you, to find this thing adjudicated in the place of prayer, for you to empower our will and choice, and if necessary, redirect our choice so that we find the will of God so we can go walk it out in our everyday existence. I mean, the dozens of people raised their hand up, Lord. I'm just going to ask you to do business with each of us. We say, Lord, here we are. Just like Jesus, he went to a place of prayer. Had some guys, some friends with him, but he went on a little bit further and said, I got to get this straight. And said he fell down, got on the ground even, and said, I am exasperated. He said, I'm distressed over this. Help me, Lord. And Lord, you came and gave him the power to make the choice. Gave him the capacity to make the choice. And then gave him the victory for having made the choice. And I pray for hands that went up all over, whether they're people watching online and people here. Lord, would you do business with us and win things with us in the place of prayer, so that what happens in all these different families and work relationships and all of our existence, Lord, that you're doing something between heaven and earth, something going on, so that that environment, that capacity for us to have things on in heaven happen on earth. We're asking for you to do that today. Lord, Jesus even walked past his closest friends and said, you guys pray, but I'm going over here. And so, Lord, dealing directly with you, we just want to say, Lord, today we want to deal directly with you. And I pray in the days ahead, these next couple of days, that we will do business directly with you and stuff would get settled in the place of prayer, so we can get settled in the reality that we walk in. Overflow with grace and mercy, Lord, and cause things to change for the glory of God, the good of the kingdom, and the blessing of our own lives. In Jesus' name, amen. I think we'll leave it that way. If you raised your hand, expect something to happen in the place of prayer. God bless you. Thank you. And we'll be here next week.